Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on the number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And now let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. 14 sites considered for new hospital. Apple juice firm crushed by cost hike. And great to be in heart of town. And the first headline story, please, Daphne.
And it's the one headed 14 sites considered for new hospital. 14 sites were identified by NHS bosses to build a new hospital, including in Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, that's HHFT, is being urged to consider building a new hospital in Winchester rather than Basingstoke after a petition reached 20,000. Winchester residents have backed the petition to save the city's A&E, which is under threat of closure as part of the Hampshire Together new hospital plans. The NHS Hampshire Together proposals include making Winchester's maternity unit midwife-led rather than consultant-led, replacing its emergency department with an urgent treatment centre for Basingstoke and Winchester patients, and building a new acute hospital in Basingstoke, either on the existing estate in Aldermaston Road or at Junction 7 of the M3. However, a petition to save Winchester's A&E has now gained more than 20,000 signatures, putting pressure on hospital bosses to reconsider their plans and build an acute hospital in Winchester instead. The campaign is now calling for HHFT to reconsider former sites that were previously considered for a new hospital, including Sir John Moore Barracks, which is a 30-minute, 23-mile drive from Basingstoke town centre. HHFT carried out a study of North and Mid Hampshire in 2020 for a possible location for a new hospital and shortlisted 14 sites for further evaluation. The Sir John Moore Barracks in Winchester was discounted as a possible site by the Trust early on. The full list of locations identified was provided following a request for information under the Freedom of Information Act. It shows whether the Trust discounted the location or shortlisted it for further evaluation. Some do not identify the exact locations that were considered. The shortlisted locations, which included one in Winchester, one in Andover, and three in Basingstoke, have since been whittled down to the two that were part of the public consultation to build a new hospital, which ended on Sunday, March the 17th. Discounted sites were land north of Basingstoke Crematoria, Basingstoke Leisure Park, Bushfield Camp, for Sir John Moore Barracks, both in Winchester, Junction 6 of the M3, Basingstoke, Bullington Cross Test Valley, Mitchell Devers Station, Sutton Scotney South, Bullington Cross North East, Test Valley. Shortlisted were Basingstoke North, Junction 7 of the M3, Basingstoke West, Andover South and Winchester North.
Apple juice firm crushed by cost hike. Rising bills and costs have forced a juice making business to close its doors after 50 years, the owner confirmed. Hill Farm Juice has been based in Swanmore since its founding in the 1970s, under its current owner for the past 11 years. In 2020, the business sold its 100-acre orchard at Hill Farm to Hillier Trees as part of a £1.5 million deal. Following this, it started importing apples from elsewhere. On Friday, March the 15th, the business confirmed this year would be its last, with five people losing their jobs. Will Dobson, the owner of Hill Farm Juice, said the closure was due to rising costs. The 46-year-old said, "It's unfortunate that costs have become unsustainable. Our electricity has gone up by 300%. It's not long ago we were running at £250 electricity, and now we're £750 plus. The stupid thing is, it's the business rates which have gone up. But for businesses, it's the standard charge which is the killer." Mr. Dobson said that other pressures had also had an effect on the business. He said, "They've increased the minimum wage, which is all well and good, but giving a 10% pay rise to one group then causes a knock-on effect elsewhere." While Mr. Dobson said the business would be winding down over the summer, selling its remaining stock on a first-come, first-served basis, he does not know how long it will last, saying that the business has about 12,000 litres of juice left to bottle. He also expressed his hope that someone might take over the brand. Mr. Dobson continued, "I'm going to miss the interaction with people. We are a small team, so I'm going to miss them, and I'm going to miss the customers. Speaking with them really showed me how much I learnt during my time in this business. We also looked after the kids at Wicker Primary School for a few years, teaching them about apples and what we do. And I hope that someone will take up that baton and keep on with their education in the area." Mr. Dobson said that after the closure of the business, he would be taking some time to think through his next steps.
Great to be in the heart of town. A new cafe has opened its doors in Alsford. Josie's opened on Monday, March the 18th, on Station Road near Alsford Station on the Watercress Line. Manager Ben Mayle said, "It's great to be here. It is a great location with a lot of footfall, and it is fantastic to be in the heart of the town. We're not here to compete with any other businesses. We're just here to do what we do best and serve great food and drink. The cafe offers a range of food and drink options. While the Alsford location does not allow dogs, an external heated covered shelter has been set up to serve customers who visit with their four-legged friends. This is the sixth Josie's coffee shop in Hampshire, with the family-run chain also having locations in Jury Street, Winchester, in Bishop's Waltham, Rumsey, Petersfield and Chandler's Ford. The Alsford branch has created approximately 20 new jobs in the market town. As previously reported, Josie's has taken over the location previously occupied by Party at the Mill after operators, the Roasting Party, announced that it would be closing the site in December last year. Luke Searle, Jose's operations manager, previously said, "We are absolutely delighted to be given the opportunity to open in Alsford. It's all happened quite quickly. We weren't planning to open more than one Jose's. It's all just happened as and when an opportunity has come up. We're not actively looking. We've had a really positive response from everyone. Jose's had an eye on Alsford for about 10 years. It's a beautiful market town that suits our demographic and bridges the gap between all our cafes. The roasting party supplies our coffee, so it's a mutual relationship we've had for many years. We'll put the Jose's touch on the space, but we're keeping much of it up the same. It's a beautiful building, and we love what the roasting party have done with it."
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Arnett Frank passed away suddenly at home after a short illness, aged 83 years. Bowen, David John, known as John, peacefully at home on Tuesday the 27th of February 2024. Eagling, Peter David, died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on Monday the 11th of March 2024, aged 81 years. Johnson, Andrew, died the 20th of February 2024 at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 57. Pierce, Christopher David, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 8th of March 2024, aged 71 years. Piper, Roderick, known as Rod. Rod passed away at his home in Winchester on the 14th of February 2024, aged 80. Underwood, Margaret Rose, passed away peacefully in Winchester on the 3rd of March 2024, aged 92 years. Waddington, Samuel John, passed away peacefully at home on the 3rd of March 2024, aged 26 years. Christian comment has been written by Philip Crinks this week. The title is Master of Humility. Thank you, Daphne.
If you go down, not to the woods, but to the Great Hall near the West Gate in Winchester, just after 10 a.m. on Sunday morning, you can be sure of a big surprise. There, and in many other places in the area, you will see a group of people gathered to do something quite strange. We will be singing hymns of praise to a king who rode into town not on a charger, but on a donkey. On Palm Sunday, Christians remember Jesus' entry to Jerusalem on a road strewn with palm branches by people who hailed him as the leader God had promised to send them. Yet Jesus chose to make his entry with an extraordinary humility. Humility is hard to define, but for this weekend we could use a P, an A and L, and an M. P is for passionate. While we might think of humble people as a bit lukewarm or disengaged from life, Jesus showed us differently. His humility was about being urgently passionate for what is right, for our neighbour's good, for all the good of all God's people, and for the kingdom of God. Soon after entering Jerusalem, Jesus drives out the money changers and animal sellers, cleansing the temple. Zeal for his Father's house consumes him. As human beings, we will always be passionate for something. And if we are not passionate for God and his people and his kingdom, it may turn out we're only really passionate about ourselves. The A and L are acceptance of limitedness. Whereas God, as he reveals himself in the person of Jesus, is an absolutely good and holy God, we are neither of those. We fall short all the time. The New Testament word we translate as sin is hamartia, the word used of an archer who misses the target. However hard we try, we limited human beings do very often miss. Thankfully, God and his grace and mercy are infinite, so that however often we fall short, if we accept that, then we can turn back and find forgiveness. The M is maturity. In Crossman's hymn, Love Unknown, which many people will sing this weekend, there is a vivid picture of the immaturity of much human behaviour. Sometimes they strew his way and his sweet praises sing, then crucify is all their breath, and for his death they thirst and cry. Maturity is to look through the noise, through the chaos, and see God's good ordering of all things in Christ. Maturity is seeing that the humble power of Jesus is true power, a rock we can safely lean on and put our trust in. We can rely on his teaching and example and whatever he has done for us, however crazed and changeable and fickle the world around us and whatever it throws at us. T.S. Eliot talked about the yearning to find the still point of the turning world. To find that, we can only look to the passionate, aware, mature humility which Jesus teaches. May God bless us and all his people through our proclaiming of him as our humble King and as we walk the way of the cross this holy week.
Thank you. And now this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with housing priority, please?
We certainly can. And this one's from Tony Gaster. We learn through the columns of this newspaper about buildings in our city. So the old recreation centre sits idle and an eyesore. Friarsgate has now been demolished after lying empty for a long time. And what is to happen? Surely we need new homes in Winchester urgently. How can buildings and areas like this just be left idle? Over the years, the council has spent a fortune on advisers and achieved exactly nothing. If this were a business depending on profit to survive, action would have been taken. How long has the name Silver Hill been mentioned? 20 years? Surely I am not alone in thinking housing is essential and a priority. Eyesore seems to be the new council motto. And that one's from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery.
Simon Lever from Badgin Farm writes, Philip Glassborough, Chronicle, March the 7th, has a valid point about the A&E unit in Winchester. He correctly states that a consultation should include a straightforward question addressing a most controversial issue. Although seemingly ignored, 20,000 people must be seriously listened to. Even though it is not vote or referendum, as Dr. Lara Ialloway, Chief Medical Officer, states, all the more reason for decision makers to listen to common sense. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Response to hospital, and that comes from Danny Chambers, who is the Lib Dem parliamentary candidate for Winchester. Had Conservative MP Flick Drummond paid proper attention to my open letter, she would know that I am supporting the building of a new hospital here in Winchester. I am totally committed to helping the local NHS overcome their staffing and financial problems caused by her Tory government, whilst maintaining the best possible services for patients in Winchester and Hampshire. My team and I spent the last 3 months speaking with experts, researching and working up our response to the public consultation. It's robust, it's evidence-based, and we believe it would deliver better healthcare for people in Winchester and Hampshire as a whole. I am happy to meet with Mrs. Drummond to talk through my proposal for a new hospital in Winchester. The future of the NHS is bigger than petty party politics. and gaining cross-party support on this one issue would be hugely valuable. My response to the public consultation can be read at winld.org.uk/news/article/Danny-responds-to-hospital-consultation.
Excellent care. I recently spent 3 weeks in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester on Kemp Welsh Ward, and I would like to thank all the nurses, carers and doctors for the excellent care I received. Having not been in hospital for any length of time before, and therefore not realising what is expected of these people, I am in awe of them all. They work 12-hour shifts, maintaining cheerfulness, kindness and dedication at all times. At a time when the NHS is constantly being criticised, I think they do an incredible job, for which I offer a huge thank you. And that letter's from Paula Tyrrell of Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester.
Selection issue. This is from Andrew Beadle of St Giles's Hill. Rachel Masker, in her letter, Chronicle, February the 29th, has reminded those of us living in Winchester at the time of Flick Drummond's expulsion from the City Council for failing to attend any meeting in 6 months after she had moved to the USA, but had failed to resign as a councillor. I've also heard of a rumour that Flick was rejected by local party members when Winchester Conservative Association sought a parliamentary candidate in 2007. I can confirm that rumour is correct, as I was at that selection meeting. However, there is no disgrace in that, as I recall there was a slate of good candidates for the scene. It was a very winnable seat. This time, there was no general meeting of party members, as under Conservative Party rules, Flick had the right as the sitting MP for part of the new constituency to become the candidate once Steve Brine had decided to stand down. However, had there been a full selection meeting, and had she made clear to party members that she supported the downgrading of the A&E unit at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, I'm doubtful whether she would have been selected. Andrew Beadle, Milesdown Place, St Giles's Hill, Winchester.
And the next letter comes from Councillor Stephen Godfrey. It is Martin Holmes who has a poor recollection of the facts about Central Winchester regeneration. Well, that was in the Chronicle, letters March the 14th, and actually Central Winchester regeneration is normally referred to as Silver Hill. It was the Lib Dems that tied the council into a contract with a single developer without tendering that led to years of delay. It was the Conservatives that invested £15 million buying the bus station, the Friars Gate surgery and King's Walk, assembling a valuable single site that has been ready for development since 2019. Nothing substantive has happened since, so I urge the council to get on with it. And that's from Councillor Stephen Godfrey, Winchester City Council, Wanston and Mitchell Dever Ward.
Mrs. Fox Rousel writes about getting real. I think that the words get real may apply to some of the inhabitants of Winchester at present. We currently live in a country that appears to be, in rapid decline, and even in this wealthy city, some are suffering hardship. Yet the cathedral has apparently decided to spend £100,000 on a statue of an overrated writer who spent a very short time in the city deploring many of its residents. I have no idea if a financial deal is behind this decision, as has been suggested, but I have no doubt that the visits of the US Jane Austen Society would help to swell the cathedral's coffers. Personally, I agree with Andrew Rutter, Chronicle, letters March the 14th, that a much better idea would be for a statue to the hard hat diver William Walker MVO. This gentleman spent 5 years working in 2 4-hour shifts a day to save our cathedral from certain collapse, and sadly died shortly afterwards, aged 49, a casualty of the flu epidemic. If it was not for Walker, there would be no cathedral, and thus no opportunity to waste money that should be directed elsewhere. And that's from Mrs. Michelle T. Fox-Rousel, St. Cross Road, St. Cross, Winchester.
Time for joined up thinking. This is from Mike Biden, also of St. Giles's Hill. Yet another consultation, this time regarding the future of Sir John Moore's barracks, has been announced. The plan is for what is in essence another swanky suburban housing development. Isn't it time we try to join up some of the thinking? Both the prison and the hospital sites are old and no longer fit for purpose, so he says. Shouldn't one of these be allocated to the barrack site and their prime city centre locations used for high-density housing? This would have multiple benefits, both public and private. The public good will be served by much-needed new government facilities, whilst the new residents will be convenient for the station, shops and all the other attractions of the city centre. They will be able to walk or bus everywhere and hardly have need of a car at all. Surely in these times of climate emergency, this is a much better course of action than continuing to extend urban sprawl. We constantly gobble up more and more of our green fields, and we will lose more if they are built on by a new prison or hospital or housing. Let us make the most of the land we have already consumed. Mike Biden, St. Giles's Hill, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Pat Wilson, and it's headed Good Old Days. When the loos were made beautiful, they won an award, and there was always someone popping in. After I had an accident, the lady on duty went across to M&S and bought me a new pair of jeans. It was around the time of decimalisation, and they were changing the coin containers to 2p's. Those were the days. There were lovely essential shops on the high street then, like greengrocers, fishmongers, supermarket, etc. I am 91 now and have seen a lot of changes. I use a radar key. Honestly, what does anyone expect with the huge volume of users in Winchester with so little loos available? Let's hope it will be included in the green space proposed on the site of the former doctor's surgery and the convenience properly maintained with pride of the city. Watch this space. And that's from Pat Wilson of Winchester.
Barry Hammond has ice cream anger. Spring is in the air, and spending time outside is highly beneficial for our well-being. Unfortunately, the warmer weather means the return of the ice cream van that parks in College Walk, diesel engine idling. This van parks less than 75 metres from our property. The fumes drift across. The local Lib Dems claim to champion cleaner air for the city, but after bringing this situation to their attention, it appears there is little commitment to tackle this issue. And that's from Barry Hammond, Granville Place, Wharf Hill.
Warm words at our AGM. This is from Barbara Anderson, who is press officer for the Muscular Dystrophy Association in Winchester. Chairman Anne Jones welcomed everyone to the Muscular Dystrophy Winchester branch AGM in February and made a particular point of saying how much she appreciated all her committee. That was very touching. She went on to say that it had been a bumper year with a fundraising bringing in a huge amount. The branch had held 8 fundraising events in the past year. These include a murder mystery evening, a Sutton Scotney coffee and cakes, a plant sale in Hyde, cream tea at Church Cottage, Compton, coffee by Rick Stein, a quiz at Shawford, a car boot sale in Winchester, plus our treasurer's annual Christmas card sale and coffee at her home. Head office sent us information on research, which continues to find new ways to help people with the many muscular conditions, and this needs a great deal of funding. The branch's payments to HQ this year, so far, have been £8,968. Chairman Anne was honoured to be invited to lunch at the House of Lords, which was inspirational. The meeting finished with everyone agreeing that they felt enthusiastic and encouraged to continue to work hard to raise money towards the support for the many sufferers of these diseases. We especially appreciate the local people who support us. Thank you. Barbara Anderson, Press Officer, Muscular Dystrophy, Winchester.
And this letter comes from Fiona Smith and it's headed Handbag Help. Please, may I send heartfelt thanks via your letters page to a fellow customer at Badger Farm Sainsbury's. On Friday afternoon, on the way home from a morning's teaching, I loaded several bags of shopping into my car and returned the trolley to the collection point, which was very full. I drove home, unpacked all the shopping, and, horrors, where was my handbag? I looked in the car, no luck. Rang Badger Farm, trying not to panic. Eventually, I was put through to the customer service desk. Yes, a customer has brought it in. I can't tell you the relief. It has my whole life in it. I drove straight back, and it was given to me. Thank you 1,000 times, whoever you are. And that was from Fiona Smith, address supplied.
The next letter is from James Freeman, who many of you may have come into contact with, either as he's a part-time bus driver for Stagecoach in Winchester or as the leading light for Friends of King Alfred buses. Now, he's written a letter that relates to a photograph that was published in an earlier edition of the Chronicle, and it shows extensive roadworks in Union Street and Eastgate Street and the back end of a bus going past those roadworks. And that photograph was taken in 1950. So he heads it up, thanks for picture of very rare bus. Thanks to the Hampshire Chronicle for publishing all those fascinating images from the Hampshire Cultural Trust's archive, Bygone Hampshire, February the 29th. There is one that particularly caught my eye. The main feature of the picture, captioned "Repairs to a Culvert under Union Street, Eastgate Street," is actually a stunning rear-end view of a very rare and shy Hanson Dorset bus. It is one of only two special lightweight Morris commercial buses with bodies built by the Kent firm of Beadle, put into service in 1950. I'm not sure that I've ever set eyes on a picture of one of these buses from the front, but to have such a clear view of the rear, showing the destination, Salisbury, is just a wonder. Thank you. And that's from James Freeman, Highcroft Road, Winchester.
Just different. This is a letter by Michael Turner of Kingsworthy. It relates to the needs of colostomy wearers. I was fascinated by the report in the Chronicle Online, March 11th, that waste disposal bins for boys are to be widely installed to receive incontinence pads, stomas and catheters. I am fortunate not to need a pad, nor do I have a catheter, but I do have a stoma. And most ostomates plan outings in such a way as to avoid having to change the bag while out. While draining a bag is a simple matter in any easy access toilet. We ostomates know where to find them. That is part of the planning. Even disposal in the generally rare emergency is not that troublesome. As regards the mental aspect of having a stoma, the members of our support group show a resilience that might surprise, for example, Councillor Todd. We may not like the hand we have drawn, but we get on with it. As my granddaughter commented, we all have a collection bag, it's just that mine is outside. I would be more than happy for Councillor Todd to come to one of our meetings, where we rejoice in being here and being pain-free. I promise no medical details. In a word, we are not special. We are just different. Michael Turner, Boyd Mean Road. Kingsworthy.
Thank you all. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email news at HampshireChronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Or you can write an old-fashioned letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Right, we'll continue now with editorial comment, letter from Westminster, First Person and Belgarum. And the editor heads up her article this week with Shop Local and Help the Community Survive. For years, decades even, there has been one company representing the county's wonderful supply of apples, Hill Farm Juice. At every show, fair, event, you could always guarantee there would be a stall selling its array of juices, a welcome refuge of hot summer's days. In fact, at last year's Winchester Food Festival, we pictured their stand. See, today we bring you the sad news that this wonderful local business is to stop. There will soon be no more delicious locally pressed juice. Hampshire Fair, a community interest company that represents Hampshire's producers, posted its sadness online, a sentiment shared by many. They said, such sad news. Hill Farm Juice is an absolutely sensational local product and will be hugely missed. Please support local producers and local independents. Without your support, the local food and drink community will struggle. And local offers good value, the best flavour, and is better for the environment, better for our communities, and better for our own well-being. Its loss may be gutting for the people who work there, but it's also a blow for the community and Hampshire. This was a great business working to put Little Swanmore on the map. Some might say that it lost its USP when it sold off its orchards, but this business is following other once successful producers in the area. Nearby Watson's Dairy, a once thriving business, stopped pasteurising and bottling milk in 2021 after it lost its contract with a large supermarket and was hit by rising production costs. Somewhat optimistically, Hill Farm Juice's owner, Will Dobson, an exceptionally talented entrepreneur, says he hopes that someone might buy it. However, this latest case hammers home a message that we hope everyone is aware of by now, for many, many reasons. Shop local, buy local. We don't have a formal letter from Westminster this week, but the Winchester MP Steve Brine has written an article entitled NHS in Winchester is Still My Priority. Daphne.
In the summer of 2007, shortly after being selected for the new Winchester seat, I produced the first edition of my Winchester Post constituency newspaper. The headline said, "My priority, if elected, would be the local NHS, and I have remained true to my word." That publication, and each one since, said, "I wanted us to retain a district general hospital in Winchester worthy of the name, with full service A&E and consultant-led maternity services. I think that's clear. 17 years later, my view hasn't changed. If anything, it's hardened as the city has grown. I was fortunate between 2017 and 19 to join the government as a health minister, and now use that experience to chair the Health Select Committee, but the focus on local services remains. Over the years, I have always supported the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and the services we as a family rely on, and I have successfully fought to bring new investment here. Transformed maternity suites in FloPo, a refurbished A&E with children's services, and the Day Treatment Centre are some examples I am proud to have opened. The new elective hub is next. I don't do that out of some dewy-eyed sense of nostalgia, but because ours is a small hospital that works in partnership with larger acute trusts, while maintaining a local feel and a good service staffed largely by fellow residents. When in January 2012 Hampshire Hospitals was created and joined together with Basingstoke and Andover, it was obvious the debate about the mix of clinical services would intensify. Being a local NHS champion is not about moving to Winchester and saying you are. It's about truly understanding the acute services we actually have and working with clinicians to protect them in the face of external forces. It's why I have held numerous Ask the NHS public meetings to give constituents the platform to speak directly with health leaders and say why they support A&E plus full maternity services in the city. This current consultation is not the first, and doubtless won't be the last, but it is certainly the most politicised, and I regret that. It scares people and distracts the public gaze from what's really under threat. Truth is, A&E in Winchester isn't closing should these proposals ever go ahead, which is by no means certain, but it is changing. If you are acutely unwell or have a serious accident in Winchester in the future, as now, the blue light services will take you to the right place to save your life. As one consultant at Hampshire Hospital Foundation Trust put it, if we're fixing you, you'll go to Winchester. If we're saving you, you'll go to the new hospital. Of greater concern to me is what we are losing: consultant-led maternity services and neonatal care. There is nothing inherently wrong with midwife-led care, of course, but I remain unconvinced this change would be either safe or sustainable, or that we have the ambulance service to transfer in an emergency situation. We should take this consultation seriously and engage with it, because far from cutting our local NHS, this government seeks to invest between 700 and 900 million into it, but we shouldn't accept it without question. One aspect of this I was not surprised to see surface again was the call to build a new hospital on the Sir John Moore Barracks site. Back in 2017, in another election year, I remember another opponent splashing this idea across the Hampshire Chronicle. It was a red herring then, and it is now. This new hospital is a badly needed replacement for Basingstoke, so of course it's not going to be in Winchester. Sure, we need significant investment at the RHCH, and I've secured the commitment for exactly that from successive ministers. But it's a dangerous distraction to wheel out the barracks again, and those saying as much know it. A fact sheet was published alongside the current consultation, showing how sites for a new hospital were evaluated, and crucially, it's earmarked by Winchester City Council for 1,000 new houses in its draft local plan. If that has changed, with the implications for the countryside of that many houses elsewhere, the leadership at WCC must say so urgently. I have written to Councillor Martin Todd to seek clarification. For nearly 20 years, I have worked to understand and support the NHS locally. That hasn't always been easy, such as supporting acute orthopaedics being centralised elsewhere, which was the right thing to do. But having served as our MP for many years, I know it's as important to get the job done with integrity as it is to do it with such, should you win.
Now, in first person, Joanna Lewis writes about creating an urban oasis. Here's Nick.
Wake up! I remember my aunt shouting in the middle of the night. Aged around 9, I was staying with her for my first sleepover. I clambered up onto the sofa with the missing arms, which I would realise much later was a chaise longue. It was in the bay window that looked out over her suburban back garden. "Can you see the fairies?" she asked. I screwed up my eyes and strained into the distance. "Yes," I replied, lying through my gappy front teeth. Looking back now, her narrow, overlooked garden was pioneering. Bordered by trees interspersed with flowering shrubs and exotic ferns, it had very little in the way of lawn. Instead, it had disappearing pathways and multiple archways festooned with blossom. Scattered through the undergrowth were moss-covered stones and empty terracotta pots on their side. "For the fairies," she said. Toads and mushrooms popped out of dark corners. Later on, a yellow plastic duck would appear, marking my uncle's ashes. Rather than simply an eccentric who lived in a semi-ishi named Satsuma, here was someone with an urban forest garden, a model for 21st century environmental angst. Today, we fret about the lack of wildlife. We lose privacy from towering new builds. We grieve trees felled by developers. But with just a small garden, patio or balcony, it's possible to do your bit to bring the rural into the city, in pots or in the ground. And if you use independent garden centres or car boot sales, you can do it on a budget. With spring in the air, I've begun creating a forest garden in suburbia. Already, I feel my spirits lifting. It sounds simple, but it's going to take a big rethink of what a garden looks like and what it does and for whom. Start off by planting a couple of trees according to the space you have, ideally north-facing. These should be fruit or nut trees, like hazel and hawthorn. Next, plant a layer of smaller dwarf trees, like crabapples and pears. Down in height again, and it's a shrub layer of fruit bushes, such as raspberries, red currants or gooseberries. Below this comes the ground bit. Grow root vegetables in the lighter areas. Plant wild garlic and wild strawberries for ground cover. They keep weeds at bay without digging. Shaded areas can then host leafy veggies and fungi. Finally, the icing on the cake. Climbers and vines will make a vertical garden. There are challenges. It's going to look untidy and take years to mature. You also need to source shrubs that are nitrogen fixing. No idea either. Like Eleagnus and sea buckthorn. What look like weeds need to be cultivated for the same reason, like clover, trefoil, comfrey and sorrel. And it's risky. Potting around the medicinal section for lemon balm, feverview and tansy means you might well be asked if you do tarot readings. Maybe avoid a full moon? Persevere. Gardening is such good medicine for well-being. It was troubling last week to see the latest statistics providing hard evidence of declining mental health in the UK. They suggest young women are in the worst shape. It's a contentious topic, of course, but surely no one disagrees that the negative effects of social media, society's obsession with looks, and the pressure to be perfect all fall more heavily on younger women. It's not unreasonable to surmise that the stomach condition which has taken out the Princess of Wales came from the stress of being thrown under the bus by Harry and Meghan. Their spiteful and oh-so-public accusations made her vulnerable to unfair criticism and vitriolic abuse. I hope she's recovering with a trowel and lots of peat-free compost. I don't have a walled garden the size of Wembley Stadium. I can't promise fairies, but my future urban forest will certainly be magical. Eventually.
Now, Belle Garum has come up with two short pieces with pictures this week from an alternative point of view. Paul, what have we got?
Rooks and peregrines.
Lovely.
And there's a lovely photograph of a peregrine with a leg with wings spread, just taking off from a ledge in the cathedral. And there's a photograph of a very bare, I can't remember what the tree is outside here in St. George's Street, but there's a rookery there up in the upper branches. I can see four rather large nests. We all know that the natural world is always in a state of flux, that nothing stays the same. Usually we report on the environment in decline as developments see hedges grubbed up, woods felled, or rivers polluted. There have been two examples in Winchester City Centre. One was the sad death of Winnie, the female peregrine, seemingly killed by a younger bird called Mel, who had usurped her relationship with William. The story of peregrines on the cathedral is a success story, as they are increasing in number in recent years. The second example is just a few yards from Belle Garum's office on Upper Brook Street. The noisy cawing alerted Chronicle staff to the new rookery that is forming in a tree next to the Casson block. Rooks, we think they are rooks and not crows, are common in the countryside but rare in urban areas. Belle Garum loves their sociable noise. Experts think their rumbustious song alerts other rooks to the location of food, affirms membership of the colony, and warns of predators. Will the peregrines be eyeing the rooks from their vantage point at the top of the cathedral tower? Or will they carry on targeting the plumper, slow-moving pigeons? Time will tell. Conservation work at Monument. The Farley Mount Monument shut last month for conservation and is expected to reopen on April the 25th. The structure near Sparsholt was built around 1795 in honour of a horse called Beware Chalk Pit. It belonged to Paulet St John, the third Earl of Bolingbroke. An inscription on a plaque on the north wall says, "Underneath lies buried a horse, the property of Paulet St John Esquire, that in the month of September 1733 leapt into a chalk pit 25 feet deep, fox hunting with his master on his back. And in October 1734, he won the hunter's plate on Worthy Downs and was rowed by his owner and was entered in the name of Beware Chalk Pit." And there's a photograph of Farley Mount Monument with scaffolding erected around it.
Thank you. Now let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. We've got a few bits and pieces here. On Sunday the 24th of March, There's a makers market at 10:30 a.m. in Kingsworthy at the Sports and Social Club. There's over 30 stalls, free parking, free entry, and non-members very welcome. On Thursday the 28th of March, there's the Gurkha curry lunch at the Gurkha Museum. They say join us at the museum for an authentic two-course Gurkha curry lunch. Sounds delicious. That starts at 12:30 and the tickets are £33. Here's one that's ongoing. Easter Adventures at Hinton Ampner. That's running from the 29th of March to the 14th of April. And they suggest go wild for our Easter trail as you don your bunny ears and take on the challenges the Easter bunny has left behind. A chocolate prize awaits for the best hopping, bouncing bunnies. And that's at the National Trust at Hinton Ampner, something for the whole family there. On Saturday the 6th of April, the National Theatre Live is at the Theatre Royal Winchester and they are showing The Motive and the Cue, and that's starring Mark Gatiss as John Gielgud and Johnny Flynn as Richard Burton in this fierce and funny new play. That starts at 7 o'clock, tickets are £16. On Friday the 12th of April, Zoe Barnett, a classical guitarist, is at the Yard in Hampshire. Classical guitarist Zoe Barnett hosts a solo concert at the Yard, Hampshire at Alsford. And that starts at 7 p.m. and tickets are £20. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 23rd of March, the sun will set at 6:24 p.m. And on Wednesday the 27th of March, the sun will rise at 5:51 a.m. and will set at 6:31 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Daphne, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes. Now, the first item is headed £400,000 to be spent on promoting travel by bus. Around £400,000 will be spent on promotional and marketing activities to educate people on how to use buses in Hampshire. The spending will also include training people who feel uncomfortable using public transport and free bus services on weekends in some parts of the county. The funding comes from the £7.16 million Bus Service Improvement Plan Plus, that's BSIP Plus, grant that the government awarded Hampshire County Council last May. It is a one-off over 2 years and must be spent on improving bus services and passenger facilities and promoting the bus network. The plan aims to transform services in England by making them more attractive, convenient and affordable. In September, Councillor Nick Adams-King, Executive Lead Member for Universal Services, considered a report on how the BSIP Plus funding would be spent, with six broad areas for investment, one being to deliver multi-operator promotional campaigns to promote bus use. How the money will be used was approved in January, with £200,000 on non-bus user education and market initiatives, and a further £200,000 for fares schemes like the £2 capped single fare initiative, which is running until the end of the year. County Council officers said the campaign will encourage people to use the bus service and make them more confident. As part of the proposal, the Our Bus campaign, delivered by the Council, Blue Star, First Solent and Stagecoach, will be extended. And free bus Saturdays or weekends in several areas of Hampshire will be funded. Council officers said, It's all about getting more people to try and use public transport to become more regular bus users, and hopefully, as that's the continued progress of getting people back on buses after COVID. According to a report on the busiest bus routes in Hampshire with frequent services, the number of passengers has now returned to or exceeded pre-pandemic levels. However, on less attractive routes, numbers still need to recover.
There's a shocking photograph showing a fire engine on its side. A shocking new photo shows a fire engine on its side after a crash in the Hampshire countryside near Winchester. The vehicle was travelling on the A272 near Chesford Head when it left the road at approximately 1 p.m. on Monday, March the 18th. The vehicle punched through a hedge before coming to a stop on its side. No injuries have been reported. A Hampshire Fire and Rescue spokesperson said, "One of our fire engines went off the road at Chesford Head on the A272 near Winchester just before 1 p.m. on Monday the 18th of March. The vehicle was not on a blue light run. No other vehicles are involved. A second appliance is in attendance at the incident to ensure the welfare of those involved and for scene safety. There are no reported injuries. The fire engine is awaiting recovery by our fleet management team and will be taken to our workshops for repairs. An investigation into the circumstances of this incident will be undertaken." And the photograph, which the article is about, shows, is taken from right above the accident scene, and it shows the fire engine lying on its side, just through the hedge in a edge of a field, the other side from the main road. But it also shows marks that indicate that it must have skidded onto the opposite side of the road and then gone across the road before it crashed through the hedge. And it also shows the other vehicle in attendance there.
Service celebrates school's milestone. An independent girls' school in Winchester, St Swithin's, performed in the cathedral's evensong to celebrate the school's 140th birthday. Prep and senior choirs from St Swithin's sang while headmistress Jane Gandy and former head Lady Joan Appleyard gave the sermon on Sunday, March the 17th. Head girl Alice Elkington gave a reading, while the senior choir debuted "O Be Joyful in the Lord," a hymn by composer and former member of staff Clive Watkiss that was commissioned for the event. Even the song was officiated by the school's chaplain, the Reverend Paul Wallington. St Swithin's School in Alresford Road was founded in 1884 by Anna Bramston. The all-girls school has a range of activities planned throughout the year to celebrate the milestone, with a birthday lunch and party planned for May the 3rd, my birthday, before the Founders' Day concert in the evening. Pupils across both the senior and prep school will come together on July the 4th to raise funds for the Bramston Bursary Foundation. And there's a photograph of the of some of the pupils in blue cassocks, bright blue cassocks, with their mouths open, singing.
Song.
Amazing Ladies raised £3,800 to fight cancer. A woman who lost her father to cancer hosted a charity ladies' night, raising thousands for charity. Claire Macklin, 46, from Colden Common, organised her second event at her local pub, The Rising Sun, in Aid of Cancer Research UK. The pub in Hill Lane was packed out on Saturday, March the 9th, and £3,800 was raised from ticket sales, a raffle and donations. Guests were treated to Prosecco and a gift bag on arrival, with sing-alongs, musical bingo and nibbles, keeping people entertained throughout the night. Claire, who owns child protection company Chances Gives Choices and lives in Hunts Close, said, My father passed away in 2014 with cancer. I was always a daddy's girl, having lost my mum at 3 years old. My dad was my world, and watching someone you love go through such a horrific experience really hits you. Emotions can take years to get past. Along the way, you hear other people's stories, and other regulars I have become friends with at the pub have shared with me that they have lost people to the same disease, so I wanted to do something. The event was such good fun. The grand prize of a trip to a private chateau in Brittany was donated by a really lovely couple who interrupted the raffle to double the prize to a 2-week stay. I'm phenomenally pleased with how it went. From my perspective, the first couple of hours are always a blur, but I then looked up and the whole pub was a sea of pink gift bags and ladies laughing, and that's why I do it. Everyone looked amazing, and it was all for a really good cause. Pub landlord Johnny Spencer matched the raffle funds to bring the total up to £3,800 and asked Claire to make the event a biannual celebration. At the request of customers, Claire also hopes to organise a gentleman's evening. Mr. Spencer posted on Facebook, "Probably one of the best days and nights I've ever had owning pubs in my 15 years. To see the rising sun, not only full, but full of people raising a tremendous amount of money for an amazing cause, as well as having a great time too. A huge thanks to Claire for bringing this all together with me and to my amazing team for working their socks off."
Milestone for work on new GP surgery. Winchester's new GP surgery has moved a step closer to completion after reaching the highest point of construction. The ultra energy efficient new St Clement's Centre has topped out, and a small ceremony was held at the site on Wednesday, March the 13th to celebrate. The new building, on the corner of Friars Gate and Upper Brook Street, replaces the 1960s building on Tanner Street. Dr. Matthew Hamilton, St Clement's GP partner, said, "Topping out represents a significant milestone in the journey of your new GP building. This structure represents more than just bricks and mortar. It embodies St Clement's commitment to providing compassionate care to all members of our community in the heart of Winchester. It is a new chapter in St Clement's mission to serve and support the health and well-being of our patients now and for generations to come. The new surgery will provide state-of-the-art accommodation for staff and patients, with 16 consulting rooms, 3 treatment rooms, admin facilities, reception, and larger waiting areas. It also includes an interactive health hub, space for primary care network services, and a chiropractor, plus other ancillary health services. Expansion space has also been built in for additional services to be delivered from the surgery in the future. The development will meet the latest sustainability and energy efficiency standards. It will be able to generate on-site energy through the installation of solar panels on the roof, and design follows net zero carbon principles throughout. It is being built by Assura, a national specialist property company. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "We want to see the best possible health facilities in Winchester, and so I'm delighted to see the project moving forward at such a pace." Sarah Tiller, Hampshire Place Director, NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight, said, "I am delighted to see this project moving forward and for the staff at the St Clement's Surgery to have a state-of-the-art facility to provide patients with the care and support they need. We are looking forward to welcoming patients into the new surgery later this year." Martin Dawson, Assura Senior Project Manager, said, We are delighted to reach this development milestone for this fantastic new medical building. It takes a great deal of teamwork from everyone involved to deliver a project like this, and the new surgery will be a major asset to the future of primary care in Winchester. The new building is set to open its doors to patients in autumn 2024.
Stupid, in apostrophes, stupid drivers bid to escape in police chase. Dash cam footage has shown a driver weaving through moving traffic and running a red light in a desperate bid to evade police. Wayne Grant, age 32, sped off after he was spotted on his phone while driving along the M3 near Winchester. Southampton Crown Court heard he was on licence for a previous offence at the time, and having been told to pull over, sped up, taking the exit for Winnall. Footage played in court showed the Volkswagen driver driving up the slip road before joining the busy roundabout on February the 4th, 2024. Grant, of Water Lane, Winchester, then began weaving through traffic as he cut across lanes, almost crashing into the back of another vehicle at one point. Prosecuting Keely Harvey said police lost sight of him, adding that he made a deliberate decision to ignore the rules of the road. They later found out his address and discovered he had collided with a hire vehicle transferring paint from one car to the other. When they arrived at his address, he was not there, but Grant handed himself into the police 3 days later in Southampton. He told officers, "I apologise for my actions. I bitterly regret any trouble or anxiety I may have caused. Grant was recalled to prison and later pleaded guilty to dangerous driving, using a phone whilst driving, failing to stop for police, failing to stop after an accident, and driving otherwise than in accordance with the licence. The prosecutor added that he'd had a provisional driving licence at the time, but was unsupervised in the vehicle. Grant has previous offences for battery, theft, criminal damage, burglary, robbery, aggravated vehicle taking, and driving whilst disqualified. Since sentencing him, Judge Nicholas Rowland said this was a foolish thing to do for anybody. Grant was jailed for 12 months and banned from driving for 2 years and 7 months. He must take an extended retest if he wants his license back after this period.
Disgraceful. Hen dog work vandalised. A piece of art by Winchester's Banksy that was only discovered about a month ago has been vandalised. As previously reported, Hendog, an anonymous graffiti artist, painted a girl playing with a daisy chain on the St George's Square bus shelter in Bishop's Waltham. A small daisy chain was also left near the mural, creating the illusion that it was coming out of the wall. And I'll describe the photograph before I continue with this article. And it's on a brick wall. It's a little girl, perhaps 2 or 3 years old, in a summer dress, sitting on the ground, just playing with a pretty little daisy chain. And someone has painted a great white cross across it and the words TOY, T-O-Y, next to it in huge letters. To continue. The artist shared an Instagram story showing himself at the mural late on Sunday, February the 11th. The Chronicle was alerted to the vandalism on Sunday, March the 17th, and photos show a cross has been painted over the artwork with the word TOY next to it. Chloe Field, the manager of nearby The Crown pub, said, "I think it is disgraceful." She said she had first noticed it had been vandalised on Friday, March the 15th. She added, "Why would you want to do that? I think it is quite a nice piece of artwork, to be honest." The vandalism was partially washed off by Joe Smith, the new parish councillor, with the word TOY being removed. Hendog has made light of the situation, producing a new piece including the vandalism, which he says is now available. The artist posted on his Instagram stories, "Thanks for the inspiration." He also said he would return and touch up the artwork if the vandalism was washed off.
Festivals and fun in new cultural strategy. Festivals and fun will be the order of the day under Civic Chief's new cultural strategy up to 2030. The City Council aims to nurture events with the help of Winchester University to boost the local economy. Council officers and Councillor Lucille Thompson, Cabinet Member for Business and Culture, organised a group of organisations to develop festivals across the district. The strategy was approved at the Winchester City Council Cabinet meeting on Thursday, March the 14th. The partners, including The Nutshell, Play to the Crowd and Hampshire Cultural Trust, have co-designed the plan, which by 2030 aims to have developed a youth movement, attracted external investment, have a growing number of festivals and events attracting new and existing audiences, and boosted the health and well-being of residents. Councillor Thompson said that the university had volunteered to help establish a cultural hub for the district. The fact that they are willing to take on this role of creating this creative and cultural hub is fantastic, so I would like to thank the University of Winchester for that. Councillor Jackie Porter said, "I think it is a really great paper. I think it has really moved us on from everything being done by the council to everyone instead taking responsibility for themselves. I am sure most councillors will have been involved in trying to set up events and taking part in events, and it is about everybody having the confidence to take that role as well." Leader of the council, Councillor Martin Todd, said, "Culture is such an important part of this city and this district. It is part of what makes the place special. It has such an impact, and I was very encouraged by this paper. I have heard many good things about the team who helped put the paper together. They have made a real difference here."
£300,000 in vapes and tobacco seized. Hampshire County Council's trading standard team has seized £300,000 worth of illegal vapes and counterfeit tobacco products over the last year. The crackdown is part of an ongoing initiative to deter retailers from selling vapes and other age-restricted goods to under-18s. The authority continues to inspect businesses and enforces measures to prevent underage sales. The County Council Cabinet Lead for Regulatory Services, Councillor Russell Oppenheimer, which includes trading standards, said, "Parents are rightly concerned about their children having access to vapes following an alarming rise in vaping by young people. The vast majority of traders in Hampshire act within the law, but we are putting more resources into catching the irresponsible minority whose actions put people at risk. Our trading standard team has ramped up activity to clamp down on illegal and underage sales, and as a result we have seized large amounts of illegal vapes that breached the legal limit of nicotine or that were sold illegally to underage people. We have also seized pouches of counterfeit tobacco which are not subject to the usual manufacturing standards and could contain any substances. This haul of 15,000 contraband items has been kept out of the hands of consumers and will now be destroyed. This is a great result that underscores our commitment to keeping people in Hampshire safe."
The item refers back to a letter that has been read previously, and it's headed up, "Sanitary bins for men to be installed at council sites. Sanitary bins will be installed in staff and public men's toilets at County Council buildings to support Prostate Cancer UK's Boys Need Bins campaign. In September last year, Councillor Martin Todd submitted a motion to urge Hampshire County Council to consider providing at least one sanitary bin in all male toilets, both public and in council buildings. The Boys Need Bins campaign calls for more inclusive sanitary waste disposal for men, which includes incontinence pads, stomas and catheters. The charity claims men with incontinence feel anxious and stressed about the challenges they face in public. This can have physical and mental impacts, resulting in them leaving their homes less often. At a full County Council meeting, Councillor Todd said, "This motion is tackling a problem that particularly affects many of the men that have been treated for prostate cancer. But prostate cancer is by no means the only condition that causes these issues. It is an invisible problem. It is an embarrassing problem. But it is almost shocking how simple it is for us as a county council to make a difference." With unanimous support, the motion was carried. Now the county council has taken a step forward and approved the expenditure of £6,550 to collect and empty the bins in all 202 public and staff male cubicle toilets in county council buildings, including libraries and outdoor centres.
Samaritans launch campaign at station. Volunteers from Winchester Samaritans have been at Winchester Railway Station as part of a new campaign. The campaign, called Small Talks Saves Lives, is to encourage members of the public to reach out to those they believe may be in crisis. The volunteers, who were at the station on Wednesday, March the 13th, spoke with passers-by and gave advice and information about the services the charity offers. Wayne Fletcher, the Winchester branch director for Samaritans, told the Chronicle, "One of our messages is that everyone has a role to play in reducing suicides. Part of our message is that we might see someone struggling and we might not have a sense of what to say. And our message is just talking with someone or asking them where you can get a coffee and making small talk might help save a life. That might be enough to stop someone from hurting themselves. We have had a few conversations with people who are struggling and want to talk, as well as a number who wanted to show gratitude for things we have done in the past. We are aware that there are people who are not aware of us or the services we provide. So this campaign has been a great opportunity to increase our visibility and meet people. We have been able to reach out to the members of the community, which is great. The campaign is being run in partnership with South Western Railway, as well as Network Rail and British Transport Police. More information on the campaign can be found on the Samaritans website. Samaritans can also be reached by calling 116 123. That's 116 123.
Hampshire veterans with service-related mobility issues can now apply for aid from the reinstated Veterans Mobility Fund. Help for Heroes and Blesma was awarded administration of the fund by the Office for Veterans Affairs and the Armed Forces Covenant Trust Fund in September. The VMF is a resource that supports physically disabled veterans by offering grants for mobility equipment to enhance their quality of life. Hampshire reportedly has around 90,000 veterans, one of the highest proportions in the country, some of whom may be eligible for grants from the VMF. It will remain open for applicants for 5 years. James Needham, the Chief Executive, Help for Heroes, said this fund will make a vital difference to the lives of those injured during military service. The fund opened for applications on March the 12th.
It's Ahead of You, 2024 Panto revealed. Play to the Crowd has revealed what this year's traditional family pantomime will be at the Theatre Royal in Winchester. Mother Goose will be on stage at the Theatre Royal in Jury Street from Saturday, November the 30th to Sunday, January the 5th, and tickets are already on sale. The story follows a lady who is about to be thrown off her land when she cannot pay her rent, until good fortune sees her making a friend, a goose, who can lay her golden eggs, making her rich. However, she is tempted to swap her goose for youth and beauty, a mistake she soon comes to realise, and then she must fight to get back her friend the goose to live truly happily ever after. This will be the first time Mother Goose has been performed at the Winchester Theatre. The pantomime will be written by James Barry and Robin Belfield, with music by Simon Slater and direction by Robin Belfield. The team says the show will be very traditional, packed full of corny jokes, original songs, live music and audience participation, and will be suitable for families. Cast announcements will follow, with support cast auditions and rehearsals later this year. The pantomime is supported by regional law firm Paris Smith. Accessible performances are available, including relaxed, audio described and BSL interpreted, as well as a touch tour. Audience are encouraged to book early to secure the best price tickets.
Agencies back charity's Sleep Out event. Trinity Winchester has announced RBC Brewin Dolphin Winchester and Charters Estate Agents Winchester as sponsors for Trinity's Big Sleep Out. Participants are invited to spend an evening under the stars on May the 24th in the grounds of Winchester College. The event, starting at 6 p.m, features on-stage entertainment, a well-being area offering yoga and reflexology, and food options from local vendors such as Pie Caramba. After 11 p.m, non-sleeping visitors will depart, leaving participants to create cardboard shelters for the night. A Best Shelter competition will award winners with prizes such as vouchers for Clue Capers, Winchester. All proceeds will be directed towards Trinity's long-term services to combat homelessness. The event aims to raise awareness and funds for Trinity's work, with tickets priced at £12 for adults, £6 for children, and £60 for groups of six or more. Participants can register at, and this is a bit of a mouthful, bigsleepout2024.eventbrite.co.uk. So that's just once more, bigsleepout2024.eventbrite.co.uk.
40 closed circuit television cameras will be added to the Chesil Street multi-story car park. Winchester already has a network of 110 cameras across the city, which are monitored from a local control room 24 hours a day. Just recently, the Winchester City Council's closed-circuit TV operatives were instrumental in the prevention of an attempted burglary in the High Street during the night. Witnessing the attempted break-in, operatives called the police, who arrested the burglars. Councillor Martin Todd said, "Statistics tell us that our city centre is safe, but we can never be complacent. The City Council works really closely with the police and other partners to reduce crime and tackle antisocial behaviour, and our closed-circuit TV service forms an important part of that work. At a time when other councils are being forced to cut their service, we're investing in it." Winchester District Inspector Matt Kirby said, "Our officers regularly patrol the Chesil Street car park area, and additional cameras can only help us to deter crime and antisocial behaviour. We already work closely with the City Council, as the use of the city's cameras is invaluable in responding to crime as it happens, as well as providing important lines of inquiry in any subsequent investigation.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. And until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.